Eastern Tide Meets Western Shore, Part 2. Aleppo. No, monsieur. I have only two other passengers, both English, a colonel from India and a young English lady from Baghdad. Does monsieur require anything? Monsieur demanded a small bottle of Perrier. 5 o'clock in the morning is an awkward time to board a train. There was still 2 hours before dawn. Conscious of an inadequate night's sleep and a delicate mission successfully accomplished, Monsieur Poirot curled up in a corner and fell asleep. When he awoke, it was 9:30, and he sallied forth to the restaurant car in search of a hot coffee. This is a shame, because although later in Christie's adventure Hercule was able to observe writing on a burnt piece of paper, he will have missed the first 4.5 interesting hours of the train trip from Aleppo in Syria to Adana in eastern Turkey. Perhaps surprisingly, Agatha Christie's Murder on the Orient Express starts at the northern Syrian city as some of the protagonists board the Taurus Express to Istanbul. Those other two passengers were Miss Debenham and Colonel Arbuthnot, whose routes to Aleppo were covered in Part 1 of Eastern Tide Meets Western Shore. In the restaurant car, Poirot overhears the colonel telling the pretty governess the news from the Punjab. This kiboshes our theory that he arrived at Al-Makal in southern Iraq from Bombay on the SS Gersoppa. The Punjabi link suggests him having set sail from Karachi in the Sindh province of modern-day Pakistan. Having sailed from there, the upside is we can speculate he shared a compartment on the Khyber Mail with our ancestors. Between the wars, my maternal grandfather was stationed in the northwest frontier territory of Imperial India, my great-grandfather on the other side of the family in Waziristan. If you try hard enough with your family tree and are prepared to head sideways as well as backwards, your ancestors will have been there too. My grandfather will have taken the mail direct from Peshawar. The colonel will have joined him at Lahore after a trying trip, perhaps on elephant back, from the foothills of the Himalayas. I digress. Aleppo to the Karasu Valley. Heading north from Aleppo, the land is fertile but nondescript as far as Afin, east of which the train addresses the Kir Dagh, a line of mountains beyond which lies the eastern side of the Karasu River Valley. This allows for an outbreak of the kind of interesting railway architecture that always accompanies challenging topography and that the sleeping Hercule Poirot will have missed. In my time in Asia Minor and the Levant, the 1980s, halfway between Christie's 1934 murder mystery and the present day, the Taurus Express left Aleppo, or Haleb, as it was then known to the railway timetable, after lunch rather than after an early breakfast at 12:20 p.m. Hercule's 4.5 hour sleep will have seen the express travel 65 miles to the Syria-Turkey border, the complexities of the crossing of which was probably what woke him up. Our other set text for the journey is a useful 1935 description of the route in Railway Wonders of the World, which tells us of what Poirot missed. Bear in mind that the author was travelling in the opposite direction, so we must transpose rises and falls and the order of places. We rapidly descend and, near Rajon, cross a deep gorge. As we're now in the 1930s French-administered former Ottoman Empire, we can add another language to the babble of place-name confusion. Antioch becomes Antioche. Iskenderun is Alexandrette. As for little dots on the map, the suspicion is they never had a spelling to start with and were written down as if an illiterate ancestor's family name remembered to a parish register by a hard-of-hearing parson. Fortunately, all spell Afrin, A-F-R-I-N, except the French, who add an unconfusing E to the end. Therefore, that northern Syrian city can be used as an anchor point, a Rosetta Stone, when exploring old maps. A 1928, 150,000 scale publication, Carte d'état du Levant sous mandant français, presumably meaning map of the Levant states under the French mandate, shows Afin clearly. If we follow the railway line north from there, we come to Raju, which sounds close enough to Rajun. In modern-day mapping, it appears as Raju, and in French Wikipedia as Rajshu. I won't trouble the reader with the variations of the Arabic. Suffice it to say, they're all the same interesting place, where a deep gorge is crossed by the Heri Deri Viaduct, a steel girder construction consisting of 3 spans, each of 243 feet, one span of 131 feet and one of 46 feet. The girders rest on towers of steel trestle work, 280 foot high.
The Heri-Deri Viaduct is also known as the Hear-Hear, Heri-Heri, Hara-Dara, and the Neri-Deri. If you're listening on the podcast and need to know how to spell Neri-Deri, it contains three acute E's and a circumflex. The viaduct is findable on satellite mapping, not least because of the shadow cast by its near 300-foot-high steel trestlework structure. Once across the gorge, we run northwards along the side of the Kur Dagh and follow the Karasu Kai River, which defines the border with Turkey. The township, railway halt and border post of Maidan İkbiz lies at the northwestern extremity of Syria. Here, only 27 miles of Turkish territory prevent the Hasidic kingdom from meeting in the Mediterranean Sea. 14 miles up and across the valley sits the Turkish border post of Vishlaye. 1 hour and 3/4 was allowed for the crossing between these posts as Syrian and Turkish border formalities demanded. In my day, the frontier was problematic for British passport holders. Diplomatic relations with Syria were suspended after Hezza Hindawi, travelling on Syrian papers, duped an Irish national into carrying a case containing a bomb onto an El Alget at Heathrow in April 1986. Suffice it to say, I've never travelled on this part of the route and will be joining the train at Adana, along with another Englishman who will be jumping onto the roof while I queue patiently with my luggage. All will be explained. In the modern day, via satellite mapping, the railway looks abandoned on the civil war-ravaged Syrian side of the border, but busies up on the Turkish side. Also visible is a refugee camp at Yesil Yurt, another result of the ongoing civil war. From Vishlaye, the line continues for 6 miles to Fevzipasa. Still in the valley, and now awake, Poirot will have seen a locomotive turntable, an 8th Moon 4 Road roundhouse beside the station there. Leaving Fevzipasa, the route divides. Two electrified lines head northwards, slowly diverging until our Berlin to Baghdad route swings westward into the Nur Oromanus Mountains. Through the Nur Oromanus Mountains. As we address those mountains, we return to the railway wonders of the world description. Remember, ourselves, Poirot, Arbuthnot and the Governess are travelling in the opposite direction. Between the stations of Mamouri and Ishalai, a distance of 21 miles, nearly 6 miles of tunnels had to be constructed, the longest of which is the Bagshti Tunnel, with a length of 5,365 yards. This tunnel was bored through hard rock, which was sufficiently compact over the second half to render lining unnecessary. It is located at an average height of 2,500 feet above sea level. The line rises now again beyond the station of Mamouri and negotiates the Amanus mountain range by a series of 14 tunnels. The construction of this part of the line was fraught with considerable difficulties because of the inaccessibility of the mountains. Perhaps surprisingly, what the author doesn't say is that the fraught construction was carried out in part by slave labour provided by British and Empire prisoners of war captured by the Turks in the Mesopotamia campaign of 1916-1917. The Royal Hampshire Regiment website tells of the surrender at Kut al-Amara, 100 miles south of Baghdad, in April 1917, the British 6th Division, of which the 1/4th Battalion Hampshires were a part, having been starved into surrender after a 5-month siege costing almost 2,000 lives. The NCOs and men among the remaining 2,689 British and 10,440 Indian soldiers and camp followers were marched emaciated hundreds of miles to the north of Mosul, where those still surviving were put to work strung out in camps along the still being constructed railway line. In the modern day, at the end of the Bagshti Tunnel, we meet a new highway that improves upon the old steep and windy D400 road route with a series of impressive tunnels and viaducts. The railway follows it westward for Osmaniye, while the eastern part of the superhighway emerges from the mountains about 5 miles north of Fevzipasa, where it continues eastwards towards Gaziantep, a gateway city for eastern and northern Turkey, northern Iraq and eastern Iran. After Osmaniye, the gradients are much kinder. We are now only 50 miles from Adana, where we will break our trip. At the halfway mark lies Sihan, famous because of the 600-mile-long Kirkuk to Sihan oil pipeline. Commissioned in 1970, the pipeline takes advantage of the same break in the mountains utilised by the D400 route to deliver up to 1.6 million barrels of oil from the Kurdish region of Iraq to the Mediterranean coast every day.
Although the pipeline is named for Sihan, it terminates 11 miles to the southeast of the city at the port of Sihan, where storage facilities and a series of piers of up to 1.5 miles in length reach into the Med to fill awaiting tankers. More recently, the terminal has also begun to export hydrocarbons from the Caspian-Tbilisi-Sihan oil pipeline. Approaching Adana. Continuing towards Adana, the land is now flat and fertile, but interrupted by the crossing of the Sihan River. Firmly in the school of deaf parson journalism, Railway World refers to the Sihan as the Thihun River, but accurately describes the railway bridge across it as being composed of 4 steel girders, each of 164-foot span. After that, ahead and to the north lies our next challenge, the Taurus Mountains, before which we shall interrupt our journey. Also on the right, these days within the outskirts of an ever-expanding Adana, lies Inkalik Air Base. As can be seen from the above photograph, Inkalik was impressive but straightforward in the 80s and famous for its 1950s U-2 spy plane runs to Bodø in Norway via the Soviet Union. The railway line follows the perimeter of the southern end of the airfield. Being very flat, your author can't recall much to see beyond the occasional F-111. Amongst other things, the intervening decades have seen 2 Gulf Wars, the war against terror, the war against ISIS, and the current civil war in Syria. A recent aerial view shows the facility to be recognisable, but much bigger and now surrounded by Adana's urban sprawl. Since 1980, the city's population has tripled to 1.7 million. In 1955, the population was 100,000, slightly less than when the Berlin-Baghdad railway was begun in the early 1900s. Now well into the city, we cross the Seaham River, or Sihun in Railway World Ease, on a viaduct described by the publication as a steel girder bridge, 1,040 foot long. The bridge is composed of 4 spans of 177 foot and one of 315 foot. The masonry piers rest on oak piles. After which we are surrounded by train and carriage sidings, including an impressive turntable with quarter circle roundhouse, which anticipate Adana railway station. Built in 1908, the station was well kept back in my day and has since been magnificently refurbished by the Turks. According to the 1980s timetable, it is now 10 p.m. We'll assume this to be one of those late evenings when your author had been called to Istanbul. He stands with his pack and little yellow oblong cardboard Edmondson ticket marked Taurus Expressi, Istanbul First Class, priced at a very reasonable £2.50 for the 22-hour, 777-mile overnight trip to Haider Pasa. Your hero has calculated exactly where the first-class carriage will stop and has lined himself up with the door. He is wasting his time, the local custom being to pull the windows open from the outside, throw your luggage into the carriage, and then climb in after it. Nearby, in the license allowed to secret agents and filmmakers, after a refreshing motorbike ride along the rooftops of Topkapi's Grand Bazaar and nearly 800 miles away, followed by a gun battle jeep chase, another English travelling gentleman prepares to jump onto the train roof. A story for next time.